This is Little Ozzy, and you're watching Rockin' Shot.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the Rock and Shock Show right here on the Classic Metal Show Network. I'm your host, Ray Trenton Toman. And once again, just want to thank you guys for joining me. This is the Rock and Shock Hangout Show. Now, today's going to be a little different. When I first put this program out on terrestrial radio, I did it in two segments, and the first segment was The Rock. And we called it Into the Fire. That was mainly where we had our artist interviews. And I really felt led to revive this for the Classic Metal Show Network. Now on today's program, I'm going to share something from the past. This is my interview with Mark Weiss on Into the Fire. Hope you guys enjoy this.
This is Rhino, and you're listening to Into the Fire.
I got a special guest on, and this is someone from my neck of the woods, my Jersey brother, Mark Weiss. So, hey, Mark, how are you, buddy?
How you doing there? Everything good over there?
You know what? It's great here in Florida right now. So I am
good.
I can't complain about it. You know, I know Jersey's probably a little bit cold, but the only thing I miss about Jersey, man, is the food. That's the one thing I miss. Florida, you can't get good pizza. You can't get a good steak sandwich. So I do miss the food from up north. But I'm just I'm glad to have you on. And, you know, we're living in a nation right now, in a world where there's so much strife going on. And I don't want to get into anything political. But, man, there are so many people that are just hopeless and have no idea what tomorrow brings for them. And I know that for me, just like you, you know, music has always been there for us to really pick us up. And the reason why I'm happy that you're on the show today is that you have an amazing story. And it's funny, the other day I was listening to, you know, Queensryche, Take Hold of the Flame. And it talks about, you know, taking hold of that, just not letting things go past and really pushing forward in what you feel peace and joy about. And that's why your story has always been so amazing, because in the midst of what some people would say was an adverse situation with you getting arrested, I mean, you turned it around and you used it to really build a career and make an impact upon, you know, hard rock and heavy metal. So I wanted to go there first and just have you tell people, you know, your story, how you started, you know, how all this stuff started for you.
Yeah. Well, it started by a 12-year-old kid just mowing lawns for $5 a cut until I knocked on this one guy's door and said, do you need a lawn, you know, mow? Because it looked really high. And he's like, no, I do it myself. And I was like, it doesn't look that way. And he kind of giggled and he says, you know, he goes, I'll tell you what, I'll give you this camera. And he went into the back room and he brought me back this camera, which is hanging right in front of me. I'm looking at it. I look at it every day. And he said, I'll give you this camera if you mow my lawn for the season. I said, all right. I figured I'd hawk it at the store for a couple $100 or something, you know. So after about 8 cuts, he gave it to me. And instead of hawking it, I just, you know, started taking an interest in it. It looked kind of cool. And then I got a roll of film and I put a roll of film in. And I started taking pictures. And my grammar school, or 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, middle school, it was called Carl Sandburg. There was a photography teacher there, and it was during the summer. And I asked him if he could teach me how to develop film. And he said, sure. And he taught me, and I was kind of mesmerized by the dark light, and the, you know, and the big timers and the cylinder. It kind of reminded me like I was going in a rocket, you know.
Right.
At that point, that's when all the rocket ships were going up, you know, the Apollos and all that. And I was into space. And so it kind of gave me that feel of going into this magical room and seeing these things appear. You put a blank piece of paper and, you know, in a tray, and it looks, you know, chemicals, and it turns out to be, you know, an image. So to me, as a 12-year-old kid, it was kind of amazing to me. And so I did that for about a year until I kind of got tired of taking pictures of my brother and my dog and things like that. So I kind of, you know, ended up on the shelf for a little bit. But then, like, shortly after that, maybe 6 months, my brother started taking me to concerts. I was 14, and I just started, you know, seeing all this stuff, you know, and it's like, I was just like mesmerized. And that's when I started that. And that's when I snuck that camera in and took some pictures, and, you know, I just got the bug. I started taking pictures and developing them, showing my friends. And then all of a sudden, here's this shy kid. I was pretty shy back in when I was a kid, and I got all this attention. So that was, I kind of liked that, and, you know, met a lot of girls that way too. And, you know, I just started doing that. And then in high school, at this point, I'm like 15, 16, Aerosmith, Peter Frampton, were playing, and I pretty much made a little business out of it. And I used to sell them in front of the concerts too. And Kiss played in 77. They played 3 nights. I went there the first night, got really good pictures. I used to sneak my camera in, you know, under my clothes and all that, and just get in the front of the stage and take pictures and, you know, hide from the cops. Well, after the show, I would, you know, go back home and develop them and come back the next day and sell the same photos from the night before to the same people. It was like 3 sold-out shows. And then I got arrested after the concert, and I went to jail and a little paddy wagon with all the shirt sellers. And so then go back home, reading the circus magazine that I had subscription for a couple of years now. And it just hit me like, you know, the masthead, the address was in New York City. So I just went there with my photographs. Mm. And it's just good timing. I saw the art director. I had to wait a few hours, but, you know, he was off deadline. And then Jerry Rothberg, the publisher, who is the founder of the magazine, took a liking to me and liked my photographs, but said, you got to use this film and do that, and let me know. Come back when you have some. I said, okay. You know, 4 months later, it was the summer. I just graduated high school, just shot Zeppelin for like 4 or 5 nights, still selling my pictures. Aerosmith played with Ted Nugent and Mahogany Rush and Journey, I think. Mm. And I just dropped them off. I said, I got some good Aerosmith photos. I dropped them off. And 2 months later, because it's not like you have the pictures and it, next thing you know, it's on your website. You know, we didn't have it back then. Magazines had like it was a monthly magazine. It was like 2 months before you'd even see it. So I dropped it off, forgot about it. Secretary called me up, says, Mark, go to the newsstand. You know, the Beatles are on the cover. It's October 1978 issue. And I went there, I looked at it, and then I still couldn't find my picture. I was patiently looking. I had a feeling, you know, I had a picture published. And it was a centerfold of Stephen Wilde. It was the biggest picture in there, you know, along with all these photographers that I used to look up to all the time, you know, like, you know, Lynn Goldsmith and Bob Gruen and Mick Rock and all that. So I was like, wow. And then I turned the page, and it was a full page of Ted Nugent. And then they started using all my pictures. And then, you know, within the year, I was doing assignments for them. You know, I did, when Van Halen came around that following summer, I shot that on assignment for him, and I met Eddie for the first time.
Wow.
Pictures in my book, you know, the shot him leaning against the trap case. And, you know, the ball just started rolling, really.
I mean, that's amazing because, you know, I remember back in the day, you know, the magazines, I mean, that really was, you know, our Facebook and stuff. And we loved looking into magazines. And if you ever read a circus magazine, you know, someone has seen your picture, you know, so you think back to that time period and all those amazing photos, and you were really part of documenting what you put together as the decade that rocked. We were talking about it a few weeks ago, and you said it's not like 200 pages. It's like 400 and something pages. Just, that's pretty amazing, man.
Thanks. Yeah. Originally it was supposed to be under 300, and then I designed the book for 600, and then we kind of ended up being about 400 pages. You know, it was hard. I didn't even know I had that many. You know, I had to like pick and choose. So that's why I decided to try to make sense of it instead of just doing like, all right, this is my Zeppelin or my you know, my Bon Jovi section and my Ozzy section. So instead of doing that, which I was going to do originally, I did it in years. So it kind of is like a visual history of how pretty much on how the clothing was and the fashion. It really shows the history of rock and roll fashion for that genre of music, you know, going from, you know, a little hard and heavy, and then it went glammy, and it went really glam in 85 when everyone started putting the hairspray in. And then when Guns N' Roses came in, and Motley, they took their hair down, and everyone followed that trend. So really, if you look at the book, it's really interesting fashion statement of hard rock and metal.
Oh yeah, it's definitely like a heavy metal Bible, man. It just takes you through decades, and it's really awesome. And I love the way you did it on the website. There's a bunch of different ways that you can get it, and I can't wait to get, you know, my few versions of it with the different pictures, because I love the memorabilia. I love everything about metal, and that's really why I love this community. You know, people that are in that hard rock and heavy metal community, they have such a love, and you can remember your first concert. You can remember, you know, the opening acts. And I used to love getting there early just to see the stage set up and hear the sound checks. And, you know, that's what that book just brings you back to, a time when people were really into, you know, everything that you can get your hands on with regards to, you know, metal and hard rock. And that's where I want to go with this right now. I want to talk about when I was in junior high and high school. You know, I lived around the Philly area, and Philly was really picking up back in the day. You know, bands like Britney Fox and Cinderella and everybody that came through to the Spectrum. And then you had, you know, the good old Empire Rock Club and playing places like the Cell Block. You know, tell me a little bit about that time and how it really affected you and how you were just such a big part of the scene back in that time.
Well, my scene started back in the late 70s when I, you know, 17 years old, and you're getting into clubs and checking out bands. And there was a lot of bands like White Tiger and Twisted Sister that were doing covers, but then starting to do originals, but they were playing like huge places and they had followings. So I would kind of latch on to like this band White Tiger, who played Zeppelin, Priest, and AC/DC. And there'd be tons of chicks, and they were cool looking. So that was kind of my hang. So that was my kind of empire with that. But that was really early 80s. And then I started just getting assignments with Circus Magazine. And then, you know, Priest would come and Ozzy. And then I kind of got out of the, I always went to clubs. But, you know, my scene was just going to these concerts, you know, everywhere. I started traveling around the world right away, really, at an early 20s. So
wow,
I got out of Dodge pretty quick.
That's pretty amazing because, that time, I mean, I think a lot of people just, they don't get how awesome the scene was back then. And, you know, just following these bands and just how big it was. And it really was a culture. And that's something that I'm kind of seeing that, you know, it's missing today. You know, we used to love to buy the albums and you take a look at all the cover art and the things that are within that album.
Well, first of all, you know, the people that love this music, like, I feel like they never grow old, you know, and I feel like, and even like the new generation of kids that like this music, they're probably won't grow old either. They'll probably just be like us. But, you know, the pop music that's now, it's like, you know, I can't see them liking that in 10, 15 years. So it's kind of like, we kind of got lucky on holding on to something that kind of keeps you, you know, not growing old, kind of, you know. It's like it's the mind spirit, because it was a community, you know, everyone like hung out, you got the t-shirt, there was the autographs, you know, the bands would come in, Motley would come in and they'd sign autographs, Ozzy would, and you'd get to meet them. It was all over the radio stations. Like, you knew when a band was playing the Garden or even Capitol Theater or you know your theaters, you know, just like, you know, everyone was playing it. You roll down the window and everyone's playing the they had long hair and they had their shirts, you know, the t-shirt, rock shirts, you knew they were, you know, they start singing, you roll down the windows and you sing together at the stop sign, you know?
Oh yeah.
So, you know, it was good. But yeah, I always wanted to do album covers. You know, because I used to be one of those kids that used to, you know, look at those album covers when I was a teenager, magazine cover. I was really happy with that. And then in 84, I got a call from Mark Puma's office, Twisted Sister's manager, saying the Twisted Sister guys and the record company want you to do their Stay Hungry album. And I knew them from back in the club days. I didn't know them personally, but you know, I knew of them and I was like, yeah, I could do it. And I knew like having an image on a cover would last the test of time, where a magazine cover is on the stands for a month and it's gone. So I really, you know, once I got the first Twisted Sister and because of the success, I got success because of their success. And it kind of fed off each other. I started getting hired a lot, and it led up to a lot of successful album covers. Like The Last Command was one right following that. You know, Wasp and Docking Under Lock and Key. Cinderella, Night Songs. I did that in Philly. And of course, the Bon Jovi Slippery When Wet was the big one. And there was a whole series of them. But yeah, it's always cool getting album covers. And you know, now you put on Sirius and they pop up really small and, you know, really crisp though. I like it. So I remember taking a walk once and there was like three of my covers came up in a row, you know, and it was like Cinderella, Bon Jovi. I was on Hair Nation and Cinderella, Bon Jovi and Britney Fox. And then I went over to Ozzy's Boneyard and my Anthrax and Wasp showed up like right in a row. So I was like, holy cow, this is like cool.
Man, that's got to be awesome just to see that, know that you were a part of creating that, you know. And I remember when Bon Jovi brought Skid Row to the Spectrum, and you know, I wanted to see Skid Row, and I was the first in the first row, and just seeing this massive Sebastian Bach, and man, he was so awesome. And you were really intricate in bringing that together as well, weren't you?
Yeah, well, in 85 I shot Madam X for Jet Records. That was Don Arden, Sharon's dad, had a record company, and they hired me. That's how I first met Madam X. And then Madam X moved, I think, to Phoenix, and they had a new singer, and they called me up. I think Maxine called me and said, you know, we want you to shoot our new, we got an investor, we want you to shoot our new pictures. And I said, sure. They got me a plane ticket. I went out there. I go, you got to meet this new singer. He's amazing. You know, I can't believe it. They put him on the phone. I remember talking to him on the phone, and it's like, you know, hey, dude, hey, man, I can't wait to meet you. And I, you know, went there. We all hung out for a week and partied and took pictures. And then maybe I went, that was 86.
Now, you also invited Madam X to your wedding, right? I remember seeing the videos with Sebastian Bach, Zakk Wylde.
I said, invite that band, Madam X, and see if they come, you know? There were characters, and they had a little spice to it. And they came, they drove, and they hung out a couple of days before the wedding and a couple of days after. And then, you know, Sebastian was just hanging around. John Bon Jovi's parents were there, so he was kind of like, you know, doing his little falsetto to them. Like, you know, he was hanging out with Zakk, and, you know, he was like, you know, he was showing off his pipes. And then he went on stage after the band was done. With Zakk, actually, because at that point, Zakk was in Ozzy. I introduced Zakk to Ozzy as well, and he was already in. He didn't record with him yet, so him and Barbara Ann were at the wedding. And they went up and they took over the wedding band. Chris from and Bam Bam, Chris from Madam X and Bam Bam, the drummer, and Zakk. And they ended up pulling up Kevin Dubrow, and they did Bang Your Head. And, you know, we got taped together. And my best man at my wedding, Dave Feld, knew Snake from Skid Row. I didn't really know Snake. He knew me because he was at my photo shoots when I was shooting John, but I never really like hung with him. But my friend Dave Feld was friends with him, and Dave kind of pieced it together. And they exchanged tapes, and next thing you know, they're flying them in, and you know, the rest is kind of history.
When I moved out of Trenton, we moved to a place called Pemberton, which is just outside of Toms River. And that's where, you know, Skid Row, those guys were from, with the exception of, you know, Sebastian. He's out of Canada, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but those guys were, they were amazing. I actually saw them at Studio One when they were first starting out. And, you know, those guys were pretty accessible. And that's what I really think. You know, you talked about that whole culture and the whole scene. You know, back then, those guys were pretty accessible. You were able to talk to them. You know, they would sign autographs. You could see Guns N' Roses at CBGB's, and I had friends, you know, back in the day, were just hanging out, talking to them, and even, you know, Morbid Angel. I used to go to the, what's that called now? The Electric Factory. They changed the name, but Morbid Angel was, you know, they were playing with Soulfly. As soon as they get done, they're in the back. You're hanging out with them. You're drinking a beer with the guys, and you know, it's pretty awesome, you know. And that's what I really love about this community, is that it's still thriving. What I wanted to talk about now is just go a little bit more into your book.
Okay.
You know, let people know where they can get it. And yeah. I know there's, like I said, there's a couple of different offers, which I think it's amazing. You know, you can pick whatever you want. And I know there's quite a few that I want to get for myself.
Well, you can get the book on its own through Amazon, for $50. And then for a few bucks more, I'll sign it. I'll personalize it to you. And then I throw in postcards. I have a little postcard sets like over here. And there's like 10 of them. We put in like 10 postcards of, different artists. And you can actually use them too. Like Cinderella. I guess got a bunch. Yeah. So you can, so that gets thrown in there. And then if you want to, get a t-shirt or you want to get an 8.5 by 11 print, the prints alone, I sell for $200 when I sign them. So I throw them in for like another $30.
That's awesome.
Go on there. I have a thing called the Bach Bundle. I remember I gave Sebastian a book and I, signed it to him and I put a picture of me and him in the back and he went some prints too that I thought he'd appreciate. And he did this unboxing, and he videotaped it. And he's going through it. He's like, wow, you get this picture of Led Zeppelin and you get this picture of Alice Cooper because I put in like 12 photos.
Right.
And then at the end, he goes, I don't know if everyone gets this, And so I turned it into, he goes, well, you better check with Mark, So I made this thing called the Bach Bundle. So I included every picture that I gave Sebastian, it was 12 of them. So, For that, it was like $500, but it's still, like I said, those 8.5 by 11s I sell for 200, 11 by 14s I sell for 300. I mean, I know it's a lot for people, but a lot of people, there are people that buy my prints. They go for thousands of dollars. Some of them, I sold a Motley Crue 40 by 60 by some guy in Ohio and it's like $5,000 I got, So.
They are amazing photos, and that's why I looked at the Bach bundle, and that's one that I would love to get. And then you have one from Tuff where they're signing the photo. You get a CD, the best of, and it's pretty cool, all the stuff that you can get. So what site? Can you give out that site?
Yeah, it's just everything's The Decade That Rocked. Just name my book, thedecadethatrocked.com, and, you just go there, and there's interviews. There's some of my press clips. There's... there's a lot of content on there, but the merch shop is in there too, of course. And there's interviews that I interview people about the book, and they talk about the book, talk about, just about the decade and some cool stuff. So there's a lot of content.
Yeah, it's a great site. Everyone's got to check that out. And now you and I were talking a couple of days ago. We're open to plan some stuff, for March, April, and that's why I'm hoping some of these things open up. But what do you have planned? You're telling me about a special contest. Are we able to talk about that yet, that what you're thinking about doing? Or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm actually, it's not a contest, but I am looking to do, it is a contest. I want to go find some radio stations and do a calendar. Because I did a calendar like 3 or 4 years ago, actually 5 years ago. And it were just, girls and bathing suits and cool, a little bit of rock and roll, but they had a contest and they get on the cover and there's a prize. I'm going to have a contest where the girls have to wear a shirt and we cut it up like I did on the Slippery Wet cover. And then we have a contest and we do some kind of, calendar for a radio station and then go to the radio stations, promote it, promote the book and come up with some other good ideas. So,
oh yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. Now you were just recently here as well in Florida doing something with Yngwie. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, he just called me up. He said, we're doing an album cover. They wanted me to do it. Last album cover I did for him was in the late 80s. It was Odyssey, and Joel and Turner was in the band. And we've been in touch. And so I drove down to Palm Coast where my son lives, and I drove to Miami for a couple of days and spent some time with him and came out with some killer photos. So that should be coming out probably in a few months, I think.
Did he show you his Ferrari collection?
Yep, he got a new one. He did some photos in front of his new one, yep.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw Yngwie with Joel and Turner, and it was at the Tower Theater, and I remember it was Brittany Fox and Lita Ford opened, and it was a killer show back then. I've always been a big fan of Yngwie, so I'm hoping one day to meet up with him as well, but he's right here in the state of Florida, and I'm just looking forward to that new album coming out. So what else you want to share with us? Anything else you got going on?
Well, I just did this welcome to my exhibition because I just became a board member to this museum by my house. They just asked me if I wanted to be on the board after I had this show there. And I said, sure. So I did this virtual concert, and I also brought some people in, like Zach Wild and Dee Snider, showed them the museum, and I had some artifacts from my photo shoots, like from the Come Out and Play album cover. I had the Manhole cover there, and I had the Slipknot t-shirt on display, and guitar that Zach gave me, and some lyrics, so, you know, just some things that made it a little bit more museum-like. I even had my first darkroom. I reenacted my first darkroom, so, you know, people would know what a darkroom was, because no one really develops film anymore. So
you're right.
I got to know them, and we did this show called Welcome to My Exhibition. It was Halloween time, so I dressed up like Alice Cooper. I do a good Alice Cooper, and I sang Welcome to My Nightmare. I did some shtick. It was kind of like a 70s, like a little sitcom comedy show.
Good. Good.
How's that, Mark? Is that good?
Yeah.
More? All right.
Give me something with your hands. Something with your hands, kind of like this.
No way. I'm not doing anything with my hands. I'm not that kind of guy. So just take the picture.
Okay.
Mark.
All right. Then just look at me. Then just look right at me. Good. Okay. That's good. I like that. All right.
Cane up. Yep. Good.
Excellent. Yep.
All right, cool. I think we got it. What do you think?
Good, right here. That's it. Good. Excellent. Good, right here. Good. Right. Yeah, that's it. Good. Right on. All right, cool.
Hey, I really need these photos, like, really quick. So, right. I think you can develop them?
Yeah, I can develop the pictures.
Okay, I need them developed, like, pronto.
No problem, yeah.
For the album cover.
Of course.
Cool.
All right, I'm gonna go and do it now.
And downs. Rock and Shock Nation. That concludes another episode of the Rock and Shock Show. Remember to check us out online at rockandshockshow.com. Again, that's rockandshockshow.com, and become a member of the Rock and Shock Nation today. Stay metal, stay horror. I'll see you guys next week.
In the ever-evolving world of music, artists need to reach their audience faster than ever before. Introducing Too Immersive For You, the Emmy-nominated pioneers in viewership experience. We've revolutionized the way music artists share their material with the world. Our groundbreaking AI engine generates stunning visuals that bring your music to life. Imagine having your own personalized music video, perfectly synchronized to your unique sound in a matter of hours, not weeks. With Too Immersive For You, it's now a reality. Get ready to unlock a new dimension of music visualization. Too Immersive For You, where music meets immersive visuals. Contact us now to discover how Too Immersive For You can elevate your music to new heights. www.musicvideoai.net